Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Hazards in the Hidden City by Auburn Tempest and Michael Anderley. Narrated by Rachel DeLude. Chapter 1. We call this game Flip Cup Slip and Slide. Emmett gestures at the sharp downward slope beneath us and the table in the clearing in the distance. Divided into two teams, you will first dip in either the Moana or the Olaf kiddie pool. Brendan gives us a Vanna White arm sweep to direct our attention. Generously donated for the day's event by Maggie and Jackson. You're welcome. Aiden takes a bow. Once appropriately doused, you will climb the little tyke slide and wait for your cue to hurdle yourself down the slope of doom. Once you get to the bottom, it'll be a scramble to stop, get up, and chug one of the bevies pre-poured in the line of red solo cups. Then, you'll take your empty cup, perch it on the table's edge, and flip it to land solidly on its rim. Once the judge deems your task complete, the next person on your team slides. I wave at the judges down at the table. Gran and Granda are abstaining from the physical part of the hilarity and will keep everyone honest. Brenny raises a hand. Oh, and once you're down there, you might want to choose a spotter to help slow your teammates down, because a couple of times when we were practicing, Em and I shot right past the play area and into the mud bog. Emmett snorts. Which was also funny as hell, but we're considering it a blooper for today. I study the land behind the table set up and make a note not to overshoot the play area. I don't want to mud bog myself on my wedding weekend. Preventing yourself from becoming a bog beast is the only time anyone can use powers. This is a magic-free event. Everyone seems clear on that. Is everybody ready? Brenny asks. That's a resounding yes. Emmett starts pointing into the crowd. Couples taking the plunge are plunging first. Fee and Sloan, you're up. Dylan and Eva, you're on deck. Moana or Olaf, lady's choice. Sloan gestures down at the blue plastic pools behind the start line. Moana all the way. I step into the pool, crouch and wriggle around a bit to get wet. Where did you guys come up with this game?
Facebook, Brenny says. It's amazing how much free time we have alone on this island. It looked hilarious, and the moment we saw it, we knew it was cool worthy.
Properly doused, I haul my wetness out of the pool and climb onto the pink and yellow plastic children's slide. It only stands 3 feet off the ground, but it'll do well as our launching point. When I'm sitting on the platform with my legs dangling down the slide and my hips squeezed tight, I give Emmett a thumbs up. Ready, player one. Sloan has even more trouble fitting into the children's chute and opts to slide down on his right hip. Oh, good idea, Hotness. I was worried I might wedge and get a slow start. Sarah laughs and waves a hand at the slides. They expand and widen to accommodate our adult sizes. Better. Yes, much better, thanks. I readjust and sit flat. There's less chance of shooting wildly off course if I'm straight. And more chance that I can fit on the slide. Eva giggles. I've got cherub curves to contend with.
I love your cherub curves, beautiful.
Dylan wraps an arm around her and pulls her in for a kiss.
Fraternizing with the enemy,
Kevin declares, breaking up the PDA.
We'll have none of that.
Dylan and Eva step apart and select their pools. As the already eloped wedding couple, this is partly their celebration, too. Which I love. Dylan splashes around in 1 foot of water like a fish on a hook and gets out to offer Eva a hand. Once they're ready and on deck, Da and Shannon move in to take their turns splashing and getting wet.
On your marks, people!
Emmett holds up his hand and points at the illuminated red light at the bottom. It's an official race car starter light, although I have no idea how they got it here.
Get set.
The center light glows brightly.
Go!
When the green light at the top goes off, I push off the platform and realize too late that I should have shimmied my butt cheeks a little before pushing forward. Oh well.
Slide burn on my ass is a small price to pay for eternal glory. As fireworks explode above us, Sloane and I plummet down the wide, water-slicked alleyway of plastic, screaming and laughing and trying to stay on course. I understand how overshooting into the mud bog is a real concern. Wobbling as water sprays up in my face, I try to use my feet as rudders to keep me on course. I'm coming in too fast and press my feet flat. Putting my hands down slows things, but my attempts spin me sideways. I end up flopping onto my elbows and going over the line head first. Getting up is an exercise in reacquainting myself with balance. I slip and shuffle over to the table. Sloane is ahead of me. He's already got his drink in hand and is tossing it back. I grab my cup and do the same. Gran's blackberry pear wine goes down way too smoothly. It's like a burst of berry bliss. I swallow it in three quick gulps and set my cup on the table. Poor Hotness has lost his lead. He's still fussing with the mechanics of Flip Cup. I, on the other hand, am a seasoned professional. I perch my cup on the table's edge and send it up and over in a beautiful arc to land upside down on its rim. "You're good, Fee," Granda says. I wave back at Eva on the hill, and she starts her descent. Once she launches, I check on Sloane. "That's it, Mackenzie, you've got this." Sloane's cup flips in a graceful arc and lands on its rim. "You're good, love," Gran says. Sloane waves for Dylan to launch, and down he comes like an arrow shot from a bow. He's got his ankles and arms crossed to make up the extra time and is gaining on Eva. "He's going to mudbog for sure," I laugh.
"Not on your life, Agra. Your brother said we could spot and catch."
Right. Poop, I really wanted to see my brother fly into the mud. With spotting in mind, I hurry out to the finish line and get ready to grab Eva's hand. She doesn't need my help. She's sitting up in a controlled and rapid descent, water whipping past, her corkscrew curls flowing out behind her. Without effort, she launches onto her feet with the grace and coordination of an angel and runs to the table to drink her wine. Dylan arrives a moment later, and they flip their cups in a synchronized effort.
"You're both good."
They wave for the next two to come down, and Da and Shannon launch off the slides.
"I fucking love this game."
Dylan picks up Eva in a burst of adrenaline and swings her around.
"Happy not our wedding, babe."
Eva laughs. "Happy not our wedding to you, too." Gran is grinning so much, she's practically glowing.
"The festivities have just begun."
After the slip and slide, the family dries off sitting around the fire pit in the clearing, while Manx, Bruin, Daisy, Doc, Jackson, Meg, and Busy have fun sliding down the course. It's virtually the same game, just minus the chugging of wine. Dart, Saxa, and Rory are happily playing with the Ireland Westerns and looking forward to the arrival of the Iceland Dragons tomorrow morning when the guests will start to arrive. Today is Family Fun Fest Day. Aiden and Kinu have the twins safely tucked off to the side and in the shade. They are 14 months old now and crazy little troublemakers. Penning them up in a play area with a ceiling was the only way not to lose control of them. Thankfully, for the moment, they're napping.
"Matrimony looks good on you, Fee."
Wallace moves a camp chair close to mine and sits to join me. He's brought a small gift bag, which he sets on the ground between his feet.
"I'm so thankful Sloane found you, and that the two of you are making a go of it."
I sip my wine and find Sloane fooling around with the boys and a soccer ball. He's got the upper hand in that arena. It seems endless years of having no one to play football with gave him time to hone his skills in footwork and perfect his touch. It still makes me sad to think of young Sloane's life as he was growing up, but everything we experience is part of what makes us who we are. I wouldn't change who he is for anything. Wallace is looking upon the roughhousing with a bittersweet smile.
"He's finally got the brothers he always wanted. All ends as it's meant, aye?"
"Yeah, I think it's destiny on some level. He fills the gaps in my life I never realized were there, and I think I do that for him too.
You definitely do.
Wallace sets his drink in the cup holder of his chair and wipes his hands dry on his pants.
Since I have you to myself for a moment, I want to give you something. I was honored to attend the Handfa celebration of your dad and Shannon last year, but wondered if you'd been to a traditional Druid wedding before.
No, this is a first for me.
Och, grand. I was hoping to bring something to the table to contribute to the festivities.
I place my hand on his wrist and meet his gaze. You brought the most important thing. Without you, there would be no him. The two of you are in a great place, and because of that, he's reclaimed a sense of foundation and family. We're both pleased and proud to have you here representing the Mackenzies.
The Mackenzies? Aye, well, we're a wee clan of two for now, but tomorrow we'll be three, and hopefully in time we'll grow.
He winks at me, and I'm washed with warmth, knowing he'll do better with his grandchildren than he did with his son. Before the moment gets awkward, he returns his attention to the gift bag.
Open it.
Oh, it's heavy. I set the bag on my lap and rifle to the bottom to come out with a hand-painted rock. The brown oval stone fills the palm of my hand and has four triquetra meeting in the center. Purple and blue flowers, green leaves, and little white dots that look like baby's breath decorate the outside edge.
Do you know what it is?
A very pretty rock.
Aye, it is that, but do you know what it is in the sense of marriage?
Nope, no idea.
In a traditional Druid celebration, the officiant will ask the bridal couple to present their oathing stone. It's a stone the two of you will place your hands upon while saying your wedding vows. The belief is that by holding the stone during the vows in turn, your love will be set in stone.
Oh, that's lovely.
Grand. I hoped you'd think so.
He smiles, looking relieved.
Turn it over.
I flip the stone and read the faded words painted on the other side. In the middle of an ordinary life, love gives us a fairy tale. Wallace nods.
It was a saying my mom used to whisper to me when life was especially hard. She painted it on her oathen stone so she would always remember the gift of their love.
I wriggle my nose as my emotions tingle and bring me close to tears. You're giving it to us?
You're going to do things right, I feel it. My parents had that kind of love.
I never did.
Maybe it escapes a generation, or maybe I haven't found my other half yet, but either way, I want the two of you to have it.
I love it, truly. Thank you. He nods.
Now, don't you feel you have to use it as your stone? This is your time to do things your way, but I thought it was a gift that bore giving.
I stand and set the rock in my chair to hug him properly. We are absolutely going to use it as our stone. I want as much Mackenzie tradition as I can get this weekend. I don't know if you noticed, but we cools tend to overpower. Mackenzie laughs.
It's a truly wonderful thing. Blessings and happiness, Fee, forever and always.
Forever and always. Chapter 2. Wallace wanders off to explore the mysterious streets of Awana Block's hidden city, and I watch him go. He's finding himself after 30 years of a difficult marriage and doing well. I wish he could find his perfect other half. He has so much going for him.
Creek! You're alive!
I spin to where my brothers have stopped playing in their game and are hugging Nikon. Rushing over, I wrap my arms around him and hold on tight. He returns the hug, his hold strong.
You really are all right.
I am.
I hate it when you die.
You and me both, Red.
There's no stopping the tears that leak free. When Nikon sacrificed himself to Jerome St. James to give us time to escape death, he broke my heart in both the best and the worst way. He died so we could live. Easing back, I blink through my tears. I love you, Nikon Sambikos. I hate that you sacrificed yourself for us, but I love you for doing it. He kisses my forehead and gives me another long hug.
I love you too, Fee. You and Irish and Callum and, yeah, Danny too.
There was no question about who had to take one for the team in that situation.
Sloane is first in line after me to start the bro hugs.
You're a brave and selfless man, Greek. I'm proud to call you family.
Hells yeah.
Callum is next in line. My brother pulls him in chest to chest and slaps his back.
Thank you for your sacrifice.
It goes on like that until Nikon has been properly hugged and thanked by the whole family. When Daw steps back, he's smiling a Cheshire Cat smile.
In the vein of celebrating Greek family, can I get everyone over to the pergola for a surprise?
I love surprises.
Dionysus ushers us forward with his hands to get us moving.
Is it wedding kittens? Tell me we're getting wedding kittens.
Dylan frowns.
What the fuck are wedding kittens?
Like in the wedding movie we watched when other people got puppies, I want a kitten.
I chuckle and slide my arm around Dionysus's hips as we head over to the orchard.
We watched Bridesmaids last weekend on our rom-com binge to get ready for the wedding. Melissa McCarthy hugging all the puppies was our favorite part.
Are we having guest gifts?
Dionysus asks. Nothing alive, no. At least, I don't think so. I haven't been all that involved in the wedding planning. Gran and Shannon took on most of the heavy lifting, leaving Sloane to work out the honeymoon details and me to enjoy the ride. I check with Sloane.
Are we?
Giving kittens to the guests, you mean?
No, I don't suppose we are.
That's very disappointing.
Dionysus's tone matches his words. I hug his arm. I promise, once things settle, we'll go to the Humane Society and find you a kitten that needs a good home. For right now, though, I'm not sure what we have planned. Sloane shrugs.
I'm in the same boat. I was supposed to help more than I was able to, but New Orleans happened.
Yeah, nothing about that case was big easy. It was a tough week from Monday through Wednesday night. Yesterday we woke up and decided that instead of waiting until Saturday, we'd enjoy a Friday family fun day, and we all came a day early. It's exactly what I needed to reset my world after Dionysus almost died and watching Nikon die. I side-hug Dionysus and reach over to squeeze Nikon's wrist.
I'm not okay.
Nikon shakes his head.
We're not going there, Red. Not this weekend. This weekend is a celebration of love and a look at the future.
And Gran making cake and me singing at the wedding,
Dionysus adds.
Och, there will be cake,
Da says, shaking his head as he looks at me.
Mam and Shannon spent the entire week in the kitchen while Da and I were out back wrangling the monkeys in the yard.
I laugh. You raised 6 kids, and if you add in Liam and Kevin, that's 8. Of them, 7 were boys. You can wrangle kids as well or better than anyone else I know. Da winks at me.
Nice of you to say, Mokri.
The pergola we built is at the front of the orchard Gran made, above the meadow and below the wall to the hidden city. To the left of the city gates, an area with a few citrus trees has become a beautiful and productive fruit grove. Here, Gran wove several benches for people to sit under the shade of the canopies to reflect. When we round the bend from the meadow area, I see the 4 women reaching up to smell the fruit hanging on the branches above, and my heart races.
Tarzan, look who it is!
Dionysus' steps falter, but I've still got my arm around his hips, and I pull him along, hoping this is what I think it is. Like many stories of lore, the tales about the Moirai being blind, one-eye-sharing hags are way off base. The Fates are graceful, resplendent women who share an incredible likeness with their mother. It still blows my mind that because goddesses live immortal lives, the visual cues of age and lineage are lost. The daughters look the same age as their mother.
Dionysus, I am pleased to see you looking better than a few days ago,
Themis says as we approach. Her daughters, the 3 goddesses of fate, Clotho, Lachesis, and Atropos, turn to greet us. They are stiff and seem quite uncomfortable. It's Clotho who approaches, holding out her hands.
We too are glad to see you are well, Gligomu.
It seems in our effort to impress a lesson upon you, the powers have seen to impress one upon us in return.
Dionysus stiffens at my side and lifts his chin. When he doesn't say anything, I realize he's having a tantrum moment. I intervene to fill the awkward silence. Everyone, this is Clotho, the fate who creates the thread of our birth and begins to spin and record our lives. Brenny nods. I've seen the tapestry you wove for me. It's as stunning as the woman who labored over it. Clotho seems surprised by his words, but inclines her head and accepts the compliment. Lachesis is the second sister to come forward. There was an oversight in our plan, cousin. Since you are not of the mortal world, your life in progress wasn't visible to me as I tended to my charges. I gesture at the second sister. This is Lachesis. She allocates the fate of lives in progress. Atropos is next. The idea that the actions of a mortal could cut your thread never occurred to us, my friend. The fault is ours, you suffered. For that, we offer you our heartfelt apologies.
Hubba what? They owe him a shit ton more than that.
He almost died. It was only because we destroyed the lick and his soul jar while Evangeline kept him alive that he's even here to enjoy my wedding.
And pouring that much power into him nearly killed her, Dylan adds.
Themis points at an empty spot on the grass, and Lady Justice's scales appear.
I believe a measure of justice should be assessed. If you would, Paddy Moo.
She signals Dionysus to stand beside the weigh scales and hands him a basket of stones. When he's in place, she raises her hand toward the low platform of the scales, and they tip dramatically to one side.
The weight of staying the life of a mortal is heavy. Dionysus, you were aware of this when you asked this of the girls, correct?
Yes, I was.
And so you offered them payment in return for the sparing of Sloane Mackenzie's mortal existence?
Dionysus nods.
I did.
What was your offer?
That I lose the privilege of my powers and the life I love with my mortal family until such a time when it was deemed I had rebalanced the debt owed to Atropos.
It was a life for a life, in a sense.
He shrugs.
In a sense. I forfeited spending time with Nikki, the Cools, and Contessa McSparkles, and gave up the life I knew as a god of the Pantheon.
The nature of your repayment was never meant to end your existence or endanger the lives of those around you in their efforts to save your life. Your repayment was not a life for a life.
Atropos shakes her head.
No, Mother, it was not. Yet through no fault on their part, he and those who love him suffered grievous and bodily harm, have they not?
The girls all nod.
Yes, Mother, Lachesis says.
As Themis makes her points, she pulls stones from the basket and places them on the higher scale.
Dionysus's powers were bound. He spent time away from his life and friends. He was unable to contribute to the quests of his group. He was injured in both human trials he's faced since. He became an anchor for a lick and all but perished. An angel nearly perished trying to sustain his life. Fiona and the others were put in grave danger to find the lick's phylactery and destroy it. With each stone she places, the scales shift toward becoming more level. When she's finished, they are close but still tipped toward him, owing a debt.
Themis takes a final stone and looks at her daughters.
Dionysus also suffered once again from the neglect of his immortal family. He trusted you to govern his penance and intercede if things went beyond the scope of the agreed absolution. You did not.
She sets the final stone in place, and the scales balance. When she extends her hand to him, he accepts.
Dionysus, your actions have been weighed and measured. Officially, I find your debt to the balance repaid. Personally, I find your compassion and growth inspiring. I am proud to witness the man you've become.
She places a palm against his cheek, and he jolts and staggers back a step.
Congratulations, Paddy Moo. Enjoy your new life. You deserve nothing less than a family who loves you.
Then she looks at me.
Take good care of him, Fiona Cool. He is a unique treasure in our world. He deserves to be treated as such.
I couldn't agree more. Themis hugs Dionysus and kisses his cheek.
Holding both his arms in her hands, she smiles. Be fabulous, my friend.
Aren't I always?
Without question. When she steps to the side, she looks at her girls and gives them a head tilt in urging. It's funny, but it's the most motherly thing I've seen pass between them. Atropos leads the charge and opens her arms. Your string remains uncut. Mother's right. It was our responsibility to watch over your well-being, but in the end, you are fine. Let us speak no more about it.
Clotho nods behind her.
Well said, sister. It is done.
Lachesis nods as well. Best to forgive and forget.
I cast them a look. Seriously? That wasn't even close to the heartfelt apology he deserves.
Dionysus shrugs and hugs each of them.
Saving Sloane's life far outweighs everything I went through over the past months. I don't regret it. Still, I neither forgive nor forget the careless disregard with which you treated my life.
The three of them look alarmed. Perhaps in time, Lachesis says.
Atropos nods.
Yes, time is something we all have plenty of. In time you shall forgive us.
Clotho releases him and moves to stand with her mother and sisters.
We look forward to making amends, dear cousin.
When the four goddesses dissolve into the air in a sprinkling of golden mist, the crowd whoops and we all move in to congratulate Dionysus.
The best wedding gift I could have gotten. I hug him.
Congrats, Tarzan. You got your mojo back.
He hugs me, and I'm thrilled to feel the energy of his power tingling over my skin.
Thanks, Jane.
We go through the ranks, everyone wishing him the best. Then everyone breaks off to return to what they were doing. When it's only the two of us, I grip Dionysus's wrist and hold him back.
Come here, sweetie. Sit with me.
Settling on one of the benches, I pat the seat beside me.
Why aren't you happy?
The smiling facade he's wearing falls, and he sighs.
I am happy.
I pull his hand to mine and link our pinky fingers.
Try again, this time with the truth.
He squeezes his hand and shoulder bumps me beside him.
I am happy about having my powers back. I feel whole and strong and indestructible again instead of vulnerable.
But
I truly thought the fates would care enough to watch over me. Of all the Pantheon members, we've shared the best times. I thought we were more than a Pantheon family. I thought I mattered to them.
Well, their apology was shit. They futzed around with saying it was unfortunate and that it's in the past, but none of them said how horrified or sorry they are.
Because they're more worried about Zeus finding out than about my well-being.
Is that what all the let's forget this happened stuff was about?
Yeah. It's tough having the king of the gods as a father. People pretend to care about me, but they're more concerned about what Zeus will think or do if they treat me wrong.
A sharp edge cuts the air as he speaks, and I wish I could wash it all away for him.
I'm sorry, dude. If it makes you feel any better, I don't give a flying fig what Zeus thinks of our friendship. In fact, I don't think he deserves you as a son.
Dionysus leans sideways and rests his head against mine.
I know. That's one of the reasons I love being a cool, zero fucks given.
I chuckle and take his hand. How about you exercise your powers and the two of us pop over to Italy to get a couple of tubs of cherry gelato?
Just us?
Yep.
But this is your wedding weekend.
There are times when it's important to include Dionysus in the group chaos of our family, and there are other times when he needs one-on-one. I suppose it stems from his lacking one-on-one positive reinforcement while growing up and getting to know himself. He didn't get that then. I ensure he gets it now. It'll still be my wedding weekend when we get back. We won't be long. I squeeze his hand and pull him to his feet. Come on. It'll be fun.
Chapter 3.
With our trip to Italy over and three large tubs of gelato in the freezer, the distraction has worked its magic. Dionysus's disappointment with the fates has faded, and he's ready to get back to the family shenanigans of the wedding weekend bonanza.
What are we doing next?
He asks.
That is exactly the right question at the right time, Greek.
Emmett joins us in the great room.
My brothers lead the troops, and Sloane, Kev, Liam, Nikon, Eva, and Da follow. For tonight's fun, we're pulling out one of our childhood favorites and giving it a team trouble twist.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?